Hey everyone, Ben Bennett here, host of the Resolution Podcast. I recently had a conversation with my friend Kobe Campbell, who is a trauma therapist and has a new book out called Why Am I Like This? In our conversation, we talk about all things trauma, what trauma is, the symptoms of it in our life, what behaviors and lies it can lead to, the connection between trauma and mental health, and ultimately how God can heal us from trauma through practical steps. I hope you enjoy the conversation.
Hey, hey.
Hey, how are you?
Doing well. How are you?
Doing good. The kids are officially asleep. They were like screaming and I was like, no, but we got them to sleep. So I'm so excited to be here and chat with you and everyone who joins us.
Me too. I can't wait for this conversation. I think it's going to be so helpful to so many people. I've just been telling them about it. Kobe Campbell, my friend, trauma therapist. We all experience pain and trauma in life, and it leads to things in our life that we want to get rid of, and things that harm us, that harm other people. So I've been building the anticipation.
Yes. Well, I'm excited to be here.
Let's get into it.
Absolutely.
I am on brand. I got your new book.
Yeah. There's so many brand early. Yes. List. Okay. The branding. Chef's kiss.
It's great. Full circle. Yes. Yeah, look forward to this conversation. I think it would be awesome if we started out just talking about what even, like, how do you define trauma?
Yeah, well, that's a great question and a question I get all the time. So I would define trauma as any moment that leaves a mark on our present lives and our perspective of the future. So any past moment that still lives in the present and affects how we see the future. And, you know, the word trauma literally translates in the Greek to the word wound. And a wound is different for every single person. And that's like my favorite talking point about trauma is for every person, something hurts differently, right? I have a twin sister, things that hurt me, she's like, I don't even feel that, and vice versa. But trauma is deeply personal, deeply contextual, and it's this experience that leaves us with something, right? I think people often think it's just the moment, but trauma is what the moment left in our lives, even after the moment is long gone.
Yeah, it's interesting how it can be unique to each person.
Yeah.
How it's almost like it's these negative experiences. A lot of times we think it's like the most horrific things, and it can be the most horrific things. And yeah. Anything bad we experience ultimately, I think, is horrific, but it's beyond our ability to cope in a healthy way in that moment.
Yeah.
And it leaves that, like you said, I love that word or that explanation of in the Greek that it's this wound, it's this lasting thing. And I know I'm thankful that these days, at least it seems like in the past couple of years, where the word trauma is being used a lot more.
Yeah.
I know when I started getting into healing and therapy and recovery and researching this stuff 10 years ago, a lot of people I talked to were like, trauma, that's like PTSD, right?
Yeah.
Or that's like you got into an accident.
Yeah.
Or like we're overseas in a war.
Yeah.
But now we're starting to realize, no, or talk about, no, there's more to trauma. So what would you say, Kobe, are some of the common ways people today are experiencing trauma, and maybe some ways that we might not naturally think, trauma?
Yes, absolutely. That's such a great question. I think that most of us have trauma that has nothing to do with physical harm. And that kind of has become the unspoken social marker. Like, if you have been hit or harmed or abused in a way that is physical, then it's valid. Then it's truly painful and it's truly wounding. But the truth is, the part of our brain that processes physical pain is the same part of our brain that processes social and emotional pain, meaning that words hurt just as deeply as someone hitting you, as someone pushing you. And I love this field because I feel like it gives us language for things we already know, but may not have the courage to say out loud. Because how many of us have memories that are still painful to this day in our bodies of things that someone said that still hurt? You'll never be anything. What's wrong with you? You're so stupid. Those things that are said, it didn't even feel good to say that out loud, mm-hmm. right? The things that are said, those things carry in our bodies, carry in our mind. And those are traumatic experiences. And I have to remind people, someone calling you stupid every day of your life is trauma. Your brain received that as a wound. And we have to acknowledge that it is a wound before we can begin healing the wound.
That's so good. I know that popular song that at least I heard as a kid was sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me.
Yeah.
And it's almost like we brainwashed the whole generation to think that you can't be traumatized or hurt by words, when in fact, words can be some of the most damaging things to people and impact us the same way.
Yeah. I used to tell my clients, sticks and stones may break your bones and words will send you to therapy.
Wow.
My rendition.
Yeah. We need to pass that one around.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And I wish more people got to really understand that their pain is valid because they feel it and not because other people validate it. Mm. Right? It's kind of like someone saying, well, you shouldn't be hungry. It doesn't matter if you say I shouldn't be hungry. If my body's hungry, my body's hungry. Right? And so many of us stop giving ourselves what we need because people have told us that our wounds aren't valid. But, you know, my voice is here to remind people that your wounds are valid, your pain is valid, and that God sees it as valid too.
Yeah, that's so good. That's one of the things I've appreciated about your book so far. And it's been ministering to me of the thing of, you talk about self-denial and how sometimes, or self-betrayal, yeah. I think was the word you used, and how we can downplay things in our lives and whatnot. Can you speak more to that, especially when it comes to like maybe downplaying the hurt that was done to us?
Yeah. Well, the truth is a lot of us are trained to betray ourselves, and betraying ourselves is not about self-discipline. It's not about, I'm not going to eat this piece of cake or I'm going to work out what I want to. Betraying ourselves is about seeing what our needs are and deciding not to meet them, because not meeting our needs garners favor in the eyes of other people. Right. And so for many of us, we have had to survive by denying our needs. For someone who grew up in a home with an abusive parent, you didn't get to speak up and share what your emotions were. It was about surviving. For someone who, you know, grew up with a physically abusive parent or a physically abusive guardian, they didn't get that opportunity to say, I'm going to take care of myself. I'm going to stand up for myself. And also just as children, even if you're not in an abusive home, sometimes a culture of the home is just not conducive to you speaking up and saying my feelings were hurt or that doesn't feel good or please stop. And so we learn often from childhood to deny ourselves, to say to ourselves, I see that you're hungry spiritually, emotionally, socially, and yet I won't feed you because everyone else says you don't need to be fed. And I don't know if you've gotten to this part of the book, but I make this analogy that like, if you are hungry and you don't eat continuously over time, do you get more or less hungry? Well, more hungry, right? Mm-hmm. The only thing that satisfies hunger is food. The only thing that satisfies the needs that we have is the needs being met, which is a reminder that it's never too late to meet those needs that weren't met, even in your childhood, because time only makes the need exacerbated. We always have the opportunity.
That's so good. So when those needs aren't met in childhood, or I think of even in the present,
yeah.
I think about 2020, I think about unhealthy relationships, dating, all kinds of things, whether it's the past or the present, trauma or unmet needs, which can lead to trauma. How does that affect somebody? How do they start to view themselves or maybe even God? What behaviors might we start to see? What are some of the symptoms?
Oh, yeah. Yes. So in the beginning of my book, I talk about our negative patterns or destructive patterns. How do you know a pattern is destructive? It's something you want to let go of, but you can't. something you want to stop doing, like in here, but for some reason you keep doing it out here, right? That's what a negative pattern is. And I talk about in the book how these patterns are both self-protective and self-destructive. They protect a part of ourselves from having to deal with something we don't want to deal with, but they also, they tear down a part of ourselves that is essential to who God's created us to be, right? And so those negative patterns may, they, one, they look different for everyone because trauma is so personal. The manifestation of the way we process trauma is also so personal, but we may find ourselves in cycles of doing things that harm ourselves, of speaking as if we want something, but unable to actually live it out and embody it because we can't let go of these patterns, because these patterns serve a purpose in our lives. These patterns help us feel safe at the expense of being free. And so we spend our lives holding on to them, white knuckling them, all the while really creating a life without them.
Mm. So good. That reminds me of some of the language I came to, or some of the concepts. Let me just put it all together this way. What we talk about in my book and the resolution movement,
yeah,
a lot of that came out of my story. And the language we use is that these struggles, these unhealthy behaviors in our life are not random.
Yeah,
they're signal
yeah.
to be answered. Yet, you know, so many of us are like, I just have a little bit of a drinking problem. Mm-hmm. I just have an unhealthy relational history and a type that I can't stop going to. Yeah. I just have a porn addiction. I'm just depressed or anxious or these kind of things. And a lot of times we think it's who we are.
Yeah.
We think it's, and that's that can lead to hopelessness because we think we can never change. Yeah. But what I love about your book is it helps connect those dots of yeah. how your past is affecting your present.
Yep.
And how if we start to even the story about the one of your clients dealing with anxiety in school and his dating relationship, and yet it was about something deeper in his parents' divorce.
Yeah.
And how I like to say, question your struggles. Don't just condemn them.
Yeah.
You know, let's get to the bottom of this.
Yeah. And I love that. Question your struggles. Don't condemn them. And what I love is I love alliteration. If you're Black, you know what it is. But we also need to get curious.
Mm.
We got to get curious. We have to. And you cannot be curious about something that you distance yourself from. You cannot want to draw near to something that repels you. Right? That's the power of God's kindness. That's the power of God's compassion, is that like God is curious. We see that in the life of Jesus. Jesus asks more questions than any other type of dialogue in scripture, mm-hmm. right? He's curious, not for his own sake, but for the sake of what it means for the person who's answering the question. He already knows the answer, but there's something about you having to answer that question out loud for yourself. You having to get that answer from in here and say, why do I do this? What does this remind me of? How do I feel without this pattern? And that's so true. You know, our past lives in the present until we process it. Like, we can't escape that. And I think that we have been so fooled truly, I don't think on purpose, but we have been fooled by generations past of if you don't talk about it, if you don't look at it, if you don't engage it, it will just go away. And that's simply not true. Actually, when you don't talk about it, when you don't look at it, when you don't engage it, you actually lose track of it, meaning you lose access to understanding what parts of your life are affected by this thing. If I have my eyes on it, I'm studying it, I'm curious about it, I can begin to see, oh man, the way I was treated in childhood, that's starting to seep into my parenthood, or that's starting to seep into friendships. But when you turn your back on it, you completely abdicate all power and authority to understand where that thing is showing up in your life in the present. And so, yeah, it's so true. That's also why it's so powerful to get to connected to people who have done this work before, people who have walked it out, and people who are professionals, because you are too close to see. The analogy I give my client is if I stick my hand right here, I may not know it's a hand until I get this far away. Mm. Sometimes we're just too close to see, and we need people like you, people like me, who have walked through it, who have done the work and can help other people do the work as well.
Yeah, that's so helpful. I know sometimes, especially in my life, it took other people naming things I'd been through Yeah. And like, really that happened? Not in like a, whoa, I'm surprised, but like a, whoa, that happened to you? Was that painful? And at first, like, oh, no, not really. We need an outsider's perspective, because our life, nobody has lived our life except for us.
Yes.
And it's normal to us. Yeah. And it takes those other people, or even hearing other people share their story and how it, the things they went through were painful, for us to be like, wait a second, was that painful for me?
Yeah.
Because back to your point of self betrayal, that's a protective mechanism.
Yes. Yes, it is. Yeah. What's so interesting is a huge symptom of trauma is a desensitization to pain, right? Mm-hmm. When we think about the fight, flight, freeze system and the rest and digest system, right? The fight, flight, freeze system, that system is meant to be like a fire alarm in our home, meaning it is supposed to go off, but under certain contexts. It is supposed to go off, but in certain circumstances that indicate that something big or something meaningful is happening. But when you experience trauma, that alarm is going off all the time. Imagine living in a house where the fire alarm is just going off all the time. The fire alarm of anxiety, of sleep issues, of overeating, of overdrinking, of feeling sick or feeling nauseous, right? This is going off all the time. So how does your body tell when there actually is a fire? You don't know, right? You lose the ability to detect what's dangerous around you because your body's telling you that everything is dangerous, right? And then you become desensitized to true danger because you're actually more familiar with true danger because of your history with trauma, right? And that's why like community matters. That's why connecting with other people matters. That's why getting someone else's eyes on the truth of your story can literally save your life. And I think that that's like literally the perfect point that you just made.
Wow. Yeah. I think of, to your point, with that, with being desensitized to danger and pain, I've realized, and as I've worked with people, I've seen so many people where pain and struggles are just so normalized that they're almost like comfortable and painful yet familiar is more comfortable and can feel more safe than the risk of change, than the risk of getting out of that and actually seeing that there is something better. And it's almost like so easy to get stuck in that rather than risk and change and find something that's actually more safe and better for us.
Oh my goodness. Yes. And that is like, these conversations are so important to me as a therapist because people need to know that as you heal, as you begin to tell your story, as you begin to let other people into your life, you are going to feel more than you ever have before. Not because you're doing something wrong and not because healing is not working, but because it's not getting worse. It's getting realer. Mm-hmm. You know, it's getting real. You're getting access to the truth of how bad it actually was. Your body has already encoded it with the truth of how bad it was, but you may not know up here or in here how bad it was, right? And like, there is just a reminder I always have to give my clients is like, you are going to feel worse even as you're getting better. Mm. You're going to feel worse. You're going to feel like, I never used to have nightmares, or I never used to feel nervous, or I never used to feel all these emotions. And I feel like I'm just flowing through my day and I'm tearing up and I don't know what to do. And I'm like, I know it feels like you're getting worse, but you're actually getting better.
Ooh, that's encouraging. Because a lot of times we can think, man, things are getting worse. Is this even working? Am I going to be stuck in this forever? Uh-huh. And just knowing that it's part of the process. Yep. It's okay to have bad days. It's okay for some symptoms to get worse. It's all part of the journey.
Yes.
So here's $1 million question for you.
Okay.
Obey.
Will I get $1 million?
I've asked that question before to other people, and they've asked the same question. Like, maybe I should start a fund if I'm going to start saying that $1 million.
God will give it to you. I believe it.
The $1 million question is, what are one or two beginning steps to heal trauma. And of course, it may be what it is specific to each person based on where they're at in the process. But if you are thinking about your clients, thinking about the people that will read this book, what are one or two steps you would encourage people to take?
The first step, I would say, identify the lie. Identify the lie. And people are, I'll be like, okay, what is the lie you tell yourself about yourself? And people will be like, oh, I really can't really think of one. And then I say, on your worst day, in your worst moment, what is the first phrase that reflexively comes up? What is it? Because we all have one. Yeah. Someone might be like, oh my God, I'm so dumb. Not everyone thinks that though. Someone might be like, no one wants me. No one's going to love me. I'm going to be alone forever. I'm worthless. I'm a piece of crap, right? We all have them. And we think like, oh, I just say that. And we think it's like really casual. But the truth is it originates somewhere. Like you said, it comes from somewhere in your worst day, in your worst moment. What is the reflexive thought that plays in your head or that you say out loud and don't even realize that you say it? And then ask yourself, what are the moments in the past that validated this lie, right? That's what we would call in my book, tracing your triggers. Because the feeling that you have right now is not a feeling that originated in the present. It's one that originated in the past and is showing up in the present, right? I can sow a seed right now. And if it's a live oak tree, it's not going to grow until the next 100 years. That doesn't mean that in 100 years in the future, I did work. It just means the work is showing up there. Right. And so I would start by saying, identify the lie. Like, what is the thing? What are the moments that validate it? And how did you respond to those moments that validated it? Did you start drinking more so that you don't feel socially awkward? Did you start numbing through watching TV all the time? Did you start lying because you didn't feel safe telling people the truth? Did you start watching porn? Did you start, like, what is the thing you did to protect yourself from the moments that made you feel like that lie was true? And then this is less of like an actual step, but kind of like a heart posture. What would it look like if you believed that the very opposite of the lie was true? What would your life look like? Like, just pretend, completely suspend reality. Pretend there are no limits and no boundaries. What would your life look like? And I can almost guarantee you, I've never had a client say, I don't know. Right. They might say, I don't know. And I'm like, are you sure? And then they'll be like, I would wake up in the morning and I would spend time with the Lord and I'd eat breakfast and I'd go on a run and I have my own business and I'd go here and I would live here. And it's amazing the detail and the clarity that we have about our lives and our calling and who we're created to be when we simply identify the lie and pretend it's not there just for a second. Just for a second.
I love that. That instills so much hope of what could be, and that there's an alternative to the lies we continue to deal with, the sin struggles, the mental health struggles, the stuff that's weighing us down in life. And I know in my journey that type of vision, what could be, where do I want to be in 5 years? What would life be like if I wasn't so depressed, if I wasn't so addicted to this? Yep. That's been so key in my journey, because it's like with anything in life, you got to know where you're going. Yeah. So many of us, I think, we're like, I'm going to go to therapy because I just don't want to be anxious anymore. Yeah, that could be part of it, but there's something so much more. The anxiety is trying to tell yourself something, and God wants to bring so much more freedom to your life. And, That is always going to be a much greater motivator than just getting rid of the problem, looking at where am I going and what is God calling me to. I know in my journey, similarly to that, my therapist had me spend time thinking about what is God's vision for my life?
Yeah.
Like, not just getting rid of pornography, not just getting rid of anxiety and depression, but who has God actually called me to be and what has he called me to do?
Yeah.
And these struggles are getting in the way of that, but God just doesn't want to remove the problem. He wants to usher me into who he created me to be.
Yeah. Yep. I shared on a live earlier today, there's a difference between running away from something and running towards something, even if at the same speed and in the same direction. Mm-hmm. And you may be running in the same direction at the end of this journey of healing, rather at the end of this journey of deeper understanding, but the motive matters. It matters because one is oriented around fear and one's oriented around hope. One's oriented around shame and guilt, and one's oriented around imagination and creativity and love. And so it matters, even if we end up running in the same direction, like, are you running away from something? Or are you running towards something? And I love the moment where my clients come to therapy because they're running away from something. And they're like, I just want to stop doing this and start doing this. I don't want to do this anymore. Give me some coping skills to deal with my anxiety so I can like get out of therapy. And I love the moment where they get to the place where they're finally like, I'm not just running away from anxiety anymore. I'm running towards what God's called me to. I'm running towards purpose. I'm running towards freedom. I'm running towards joy. I'm running towards intimacy. And I always tell my clients, listen, if the barriers that the enemy is placing in your life are this big, this intense, this fear-inducing, then what must be on the other side? Hmm. No one works this hard to block you from something that's worthless. No one spends this much energy to keep you from something that has no value. If the enemy's been trying to take you out since birth, and there are really people, if you heard their stories, you would really believe the enemy's been trying to take them out since the moment they escaped their mother's womb. And yet I have to remind them, like, then what's on the other side? Let's not stop here. Let's not stop with I'm able to sleep. Let's not stop with, I'm less anxious. Let's not stop, period. Let's keep going until we find out exactly what God made you for. Because something's telling me that the depths at which the enemy's tried to drag you to correlate with the heights at which God wants to bless you and meet you at. Hmm.
So good. I'm just letting that sink in. Well, the new book is amazing. Hope everyone picks it up. Kobe, I'd love to ask you, what can people expect to learn, to gain from this? I mean, you've got a wealth of knowledge. You've got so much great content. And there's a lot of, as I've been reading, a lot of special gems and such helpful things in this. What can people expect to gain from this?
Yes. I think people should expect to gain courage. Mm. I share a lot of my own story, stories from my clients, stories in my life. And I do it because the goal is courage. You can get all the resource. You can get all the information. You can get all the tips and tricks and coping skills. But if you don't have the courage to do something with it, it means nothing. So my hope in this book is to give people courage and to give them information, to help them understand why you are the way you are. There's nothing wrong with you. You are not broken. You are wounded, right? You are not defective, that you are hurt. And the thing about wounds is you can heal from them. Wounds can be healed, right? Your life can be restored. The things that felt like they fell apart can come back together in a way that's more beautiful than you ever imagined. And so my hope is to marry the therapeutic and the theological and help them understand, like, where does trauma show up in scripture? How does God respond to my pain? How does God respond to my anxiety? Is God angry at me for having automatic trauma responses that I can't control? Right? These are questions that people ask me, like, when we're in therapy. And so I was like, there needs to be a trauma 101 book for believers, a trauma 101 book for people who are trying to figure out how to heal their hearts and deepen their faith. And so that is my hope, is that at the end of this book, each person feels encouraged to heal their heart, to take the journey, and then also to deepen their faith.
Mm, so good. And I know they will experience that, because I've been experiencing that as I've been reading through it. And I truly believe this will be the most important resource for Christians. And even if you're not a Christian, on the topic of trauma this year, I read a lot of books and have written on this topic. I research on this topic all the time. And this is this is a gold mine and so important. And I know it's going to help so many people.
Thank you. Yes. I just stuck the link in there for the people who are asking. It's called Why Am I Like This? It comes out April 4th, literally a week from tomorrow. I'm believing big things for this book, believing that it's going to touch people's hearts and reach people, and that it's going to be a source of healing for generations, a source of healing for the hopeless, a source of healing for the brokenhearted. And I'm delusional enough to believe that God's going to do the impossible, that this book is going to be on the New York Times bestseller list, that this book awards. I really am. And, you know, I think that what I've loved about this book is, like, for me, my limiting beliefs, my negative core beliefs were that I couldn't be the person who was special, that I couldn't be the person who got the good things. And so writing this book and launching this book has truly been me walking out the principles of this book, of saying, why not me? Why can't a miracle happen for me? Why can't something incredible happen for me? And for someone, it might just be like, oh, you're hoping for that. But for the me who couldn't even hope to see the next day, I know how big that is. And so I'm grateful to share that with everybody and bring them in on my delusional journeys.
Yes. Well, it doesn't sound delusional to me. It's such a good resource. And I love how much you share, even the intro. I'm not going to spoil it for everyone, but the intro or introduction to the book about your story, about how you got involved in this, about what was going on and the hopelessness you were experiencing and how God met you. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of God we serve. And he shows up and he heals. And look at what he's doing now.
Look at what he's doing. I'm telling you, I literally am like, guys, you think that this is crazy. I've had to tell numerous people, maybe my publishing team, you guys think this is crazy, but I literally experienced crazy before. Mm-hmm. And so you're right. That's the kind of God we serve. The God who just, like, shows up last minute, on time, but does years worth of work, years worth of saving, years worth of redemption in a moment. I've been there, you know, and I think that's why I'm so passionate about this. It's like, I've been the hopeless person. I've been the sad person. I've been the person covered in shame and guilt. And I've been the person who didn't want to live anymore. I've been there. I became a trauma therapist because I dealt with my trauma, not because I wanted to be an expert, but because I wanted to help people just like me walk into the healing they thought was never possible.
So powerful. So encouraging. Get the book.
Why am I like this? You can pre-order it today. Grab a copy for yourself. Grab a copy for your friend. Each chapter ends with reflection questions. So it's a great resource to read with people, whether it's just your girlfriends, your group chat, a small group. And hopefully by the end of the year, we'll have an official Bible study out.
Ooh, can't wait for that.
Yeah.
We are.
I'm excited for it.
Well, Kobe, it's awesome chatting with you, friend. I know it's been a minute, and yes. I'm so excited for you and this book, and so excited for all the stuff God's doing in your life. And I love all the social content you're putting out.
Thank you.
So encouraging to me.
Thank you. Thank you, Ben. You've been such a support, and I am so grateful for your support and your presence and chatting with me, sharing your platform, your peoples with me. So thank you so much.
Absolutely. Well, I'll talk to you soon, and have a good night.
Talk to you later. Bye.